Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati, the waning days of summer. I'm here with my co-host, Burl Love. Hi,
Burl. Sherry. Did you watch tennis?
I did. I followed along at cincinnati.com, and I did, as I always do, go at least one time. So this time, it was only once.
You went once.
I had a lot going on.
Well, you and about 205,000 other people...
I'm aware.
...went to watch tennis, the Cincinnati Open. I thought we could touch on that because this was sort of a big year for the tournament in terms of the sigh of relief year. You know, last year...
We kept it.
Yes, last year when the tournament reached its finals, I remember Coco Gauff, who had won the women's championship, said to the crowd, "I really like playing here. I hope to come back and play here," because that's when things were sort of up in the air. You know, there was a new owner for the tournament. Charlotte, North Carolina was talking about building a facility, and it looked like almost a foregone conclusion that the tournament was going to be moving. But a late inning rally occurred. All these business leaders pulled together. We talked to John Barrett.
We did.
Who gave us some behind the scenes information on you know, that it was really about ponying up, you know, that the business community, the region, local governments, especially Warren County, where the facility is based, stepped up and the tournament stayed. So this was the sigh of relief tournament, you know, like we don't have to worry about losing it. It's here to stay. But also all indications say that this is a growing event. They were up in attendance. The creature comfort improvements that they did seemed well received. They added another day of play.
They did. It did seem busier than in past years, for sure. And I did meet, I'm a talker. Surprise.
Who'd you meet?
I did meet a lot of people in from out of town who wanted to see what this was because they go to the other tournaments, the other opens, the Dallas, and they had come from other cities to see what it was all about. And it was interesting to hear their perspective. And all of them said that we performed very well in comparison to the other places where these tennis tournaments are held, which that was good to hear.
That was good. Well, like I said, it's a little, I mean, we're going to look at the economic impact. There's going to be, you know, a lot of reporting to come on that. But the early indications are that, you know, based on attendance, based on, like you said, room nights, hotel bookings and everything like that, that it was a huge success.
And so, yay that we still have it. We can do a lot of different things. It'll be interesting to see when they start having concerts there and like using it kind of year round.
Right. Yeah. And speaking of Coco Gauff, she exited early. That was a little bit of
She did. Yeah.
There were a lot of
there
upsets.
There were some moments. Yeah.
Yeah. There were a lot of upsets. But yeah, I didn't make it out. I went the year before. I have FOMO now, Sherry. I wish I kind of would have made it out there.
All right. I really need to start planning your schedule. Lauren does a good job at home.
She went.
But like
she
the thing,
she and her friend went. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And had a great time. Okay. Well, we have a very special guest today, don't we?
We do. Speaking of still summer, our guest today is Candace McGraw, the CEO of CBG, the airport. And we're going to talk about all things airport. And I'm excited to get into things. She is retiring. Not till next year, end of June. They're actively interviewing people, and so I don't think she's going to drop too much tea on that. I mean, a girl, you know, a reporter can dream, but we're going to talk about all the different things going on at the airport, which we could write about every day. There's so many things.
She has been CEO since 2011, so that's not just a long time, but a busy time in the...
It was very different.
...in the history of CVG. You know, I get asked a lot by people when they fly in here, like, what does CVG stand for? And they're assuming the C is Cincinnati.
Right.
Covington, Sherry.
Yes, I know.
Yes. Do you know why that is?
Well, it's in Northern Kentucky.
Right, but it's not in Covington.
It isn't.
But... when the airport was first built, Covington was the closest incorporated municipality.
Wow.
And that's why
that was a bit ago.
To this day, it proudly carries the CVG. Yeah.
All right. It is memorable.
Even though it's in Hebron.
It's memorable call letters.
Is it Hebron or Hebron? I don't like to weigh into that. I'm not fluent in Kentucky.
Anyway,
well, let's bring on our special guest.
Special guest time here on That's So Cincinnati. We're here with Candace McGraw from the airport. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
Don't you think we should have traveled abroad to do this, Burl?
We should have met in one of the cities you've been in lately.
That would have been wonderful. I'm happy to get on a plane at any time. Drop of the hat.
We could have taken the British Airway flight.
We could have.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a marvelous flight. If you haven't done it, please do so. It is marvelous. You get on, you know, probably I think it's 9:30, 10 o'clock at night, have a quick dinner. You wake up and you're in London. It's wonderful.
Paging Alex Coolidge.
There you go.
Alex Coolidge. So that it's a direct flight. And how big a deal was that for us to get that here?
It is a huge deal. So when you think about this area of the country, our flight to Paris was the only transatlantic flight in all of Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana for many, many years. Just last year, Cleveland has a direct flight to Dublin. That is still the only flight, but for now, our British Airways flight. So when they started service last year, it was a hard-fought battle. We were the only city that British Airways added in North America. And so to have that direct connection to London is great for a number of reasons. One, for business, of course, and then for leisure travel. And then London, of course, is a great one stop anywhere in the world. So when you look at the economic benefit, not only just, you know, the business and travel benefit, but economic benefit to this region is $57 million a year in economic benefit by having that flight.
How does that work? Because it draws people here to take it?
It draws people here to take it. It also, you know, generates tourism in the area. It generates additional business development, et cetera.
All right. Well, I am glad that we have it.
So yeah, no. And it's a great trip. I was just in London, I don't know, a few months ago, a month or two ago, going to they call it the Farnborough Air Show, but it's actually a big industry event to try to recruit additional business. So you talk to aircraft manufacturers, airlines, et cetera. And then we had a great dinner with the people at BA and thanked them for this service. And they said it was one of the best performing routes that they've had in the history of BA. So I'm appreciative of everybody using that flight.
I know, because we bring it. Also, Paging Sundance Film Festival. Just give us a chance. Like, we rise to the occasion.
No, I agree with you, right? And that was part of the discussion with the Sundance folks. And I was, you know, fortunate enough to be in those discussions. And we talked a lot about air service, because that matters, right? Connectivity matters. And to say that we had the direct flight from Paris, the direct flight from London, and all the great service we have into, say, New York and the West Coast, those things matter when you're trying to attract and retain business and events.
Like the bid we never see, but that's true. Like, you don't even think about that. I kind of focused when I wrote about it, like all these theaters that we have that you don't really think about. Like, we have like a good template here down in a walkable distance, but I didn't even think about air travel.
Yeah.
So one of the reasons we're excited to have you as our guest is you announced your retirement. It's not imminent.
And we're not excited about that.
officially, it's June of 2025. But the process has already started to bring on your replacement. As we've reported, others reported, there will be a transition period. So you now have you've had a lot of time to reflect on your time since 2011 as CEO of the airport. And you're credited with leading it through a change, you know, a transition from being primarily known as a Delta hub to something that's a little more, I would say, diversified in what this airport is. So as you've reflected on this, how do you feel about where the airport is today compared to when you took over?
It has been a marvelous ride at CVG. When I think about the time where we were and where we are today, I think you hit on the key word. It was diversification. You know, when I arrived here, it was late 2009, and as chief administrative officer, and I became CEO in July of 2011. You know, we had one dominant carrier, and then we had the legacy carriers. We had no low cost carriers. We had very little cargo to speak of, et cetera. So what we've done since that time is we've now have 13 or 14 passenger carriers. About 30% of our business is low-cost carrier. So on the commercial front, we've diversified that, which has resulted in lower airfares, because traditionally Cincinnati at that time was always the highest airfare airport, not highest cost, highest airfare. Because of lack
time,
of competition.
It wasn't uncommon for people traveling from Cincinnati to leave from Dayton or Columbus.
Exactly.
Just because of how high fares were.
Exactly, right. And in the business, that's called leakage, and you do a study. And we had a lot of passengers that bypassed us, either drove up to Dayton, went down to Louisville, Lexington. You know, we internally call that the Ring of Fire. There's five airports around us that, you know, you can go to Indianapolis, Columbus, Louisville, Lexington, or Dayton. And so we had to bring all of those people back to the home base, bring them back. So that was key, right, is getting air service, commercial air service, right. Then we said, all right, we have a great partner in DHL. How can we work with them to help them grow and diversify into a bigger cargo business? We are their second largest operation in the world, only behind Leipzig, Germany, and ahead of Hong Kong. And even occasionally we surpass Leipzig in terms of operations. So DHL has been a marvelous tenant.
And that's been a quiet success for the airport, because we don't think about that when we order something off of Amazon. We just expect it to show up. When we think of the airport, mostly we think about when we're traveling. We don't think about that whole operation that normally, you know, we don't. Anyway, I would, when I say we, the, you know, the just general public is very unassuming about how big of a component that is right now for the airport.
Oh, it's a huge component. About, you know, say 60% of our business, 65% of we kind of track the landings, landed weight at the airport is all based on cargo. So DHL, right, second largest operation in the world. Amazon Prime, their flights, we are the largest operation in the world for Amazon. And they're located across the street from one another. And they bring a tremendous amount of business to this airport. Because as I talk to people in terms of the economic development world, I say, look, if I was making a widget, I would locate my business somewhere in proximity to the airport. Because now I can get my widget anywhere in the world with redundancy, you know, in very short order. So they can take deliveries up to 10 o'clock at night. You load it on a plane at midnight, and it's halfway across the world, or all the way across the world. It's sitting in Bahrain by, you know, 6 or 7 in the morning. It's so if in terms of economic development, very important. It also helps passenger development in that the more heft, more operations we have from cargo, it lowers the cost for the passenger carriers as well, making it more attractive for them to do business at CVG. So it's really a great synergy and a great use of our infrastructure. And then sort of the third leg of our stool that we've really focused on is land development. You know, we have 7,700 acres owned by the airport, and we have focused on developing both airside development, things that, you know, are going to support operations at the airport, like hangars. And we have a school for aviation mechanics, trying to keep, you know, that sort of flywheel of the airport going. And then we also have hundreds of acres that have been developed, for non-airport use, like Wayfair, or GE Aeronautics has a manufacturing site on our facility. So there's lots of things we've done in terms of land development as well.
Hangar Row is what we reported on recently. I can't even imagine how much happens. You know, we, like I said, we take air travel for granted, but things like, you know, airline maintenance, and you have to have hangars, you have to have facilities for all of that. how big of a, when you said the third stool is that land development, how much potential is there?
Oh, the potential is huge. That, you know, I referenced, you know, going to London for this air show. That was really what we were pitching, was Hangar Row. We have several hundred acres available for development. Right now, it's just you know, raw land. We have a great $20 million grant from the state of Kentucky to help with some infrastructure development. We're working with Boone County on roadways, because I think it can be a site for maybe 3-4 more maintenance hangars, avionics shops. I'd love to see, my dream would be an aviation manufacturer on that site. And all of that is really, it's twofold. One, it generates jobs and generates economic benefit for this community, and we can talk about that a little bit. But two, it also ensures the airport is sustainable into the future. Because when, you know, you bring an aircraft in here for maintenance, you don't fly it out empty in the morning. They're going to figure out how to put a box or a person on it, right, and make the most of that trip. So it just creates an environment that just keeps the airport sustainable well into the future.
All right, I'm starting a new business. So when the planes are here to get fixed and everything, then it's, you take a surprise trip.
Oh, wouldn't that be great?
A surprise trip wherever that plane is going. You're like, I'm taking.
Just be at the airport with your suitcase
ready
to go.
And you go.
Have a parka and a bathing suit in your suitcase ready to roll.
So these are things that most people don't see when they go to the airport, but there have been a lot of improvements to what travelers see during your tenure. I'll stop short of saying complete makeover, but if you go back 10, 15 years and compare what the airport experience was then to now, it's rather stunning. You have in your master plan, the New Heights plan, a whole area about non-aeronautical revenue. Is that part of what is driving that, giving people food options, shopping options, you know, airport lounges, all the things that that air travelers see now? Talk a little bit about how that came about and how you feel about where the airport is, and maybe, like, if you were here 3 more years, what would be on your to-do list?
Oh, sure. Well, the to-do list is very long. So when my successor comes, there'll be no shortage of good projects that I hope they will continue, right? But let's talk about just sort of the airport as it was a number of years ago. So when I got there, we had 3 terminals. It was old Terminal 1, where our offices were, and that was the only thing left in that terminal. There was Terminal 2, which in the day, I think, you know, served probably people well, but it was a sorry little 8-gate facility. And then you had Terminal 3, which is what we use now. So over the course of time, we shut down Terminal 1 and 2, consolidated everything into the main terminal, demolished out Terminals 1 and 2, and that's now where the rental car facility is, that consolidated rental car facility. And so when people come to the airport now and get dropped off at the ground transportation center and walk through that rental car facility where it matches up with ticketing, well, over the next few years, they're going to see that filled with ticket counters.
Okay.
So we're about to embark on a big renovation program of the airport. And we know when you come through the airport in the morning, the bulk of our flights are, you know, between 5 and 7, 5 and 8 in the morning. You know, the vast, large percentage of our flights, it is really crowded and it is really chock full of people. So what we're going to do is put in ticket counters over by that rental car facility on that ticketing lobby and sort of spread that out so people will have an easier experience getting to and through the ticket lobby.
So just so I'm clear on this, right now, if you take the long-term parking shuttle and get dropped off, you have to go up an elevator and then you kind of walk through a big open area. There's a beautiful mural
there. Beautiful Christian Dallas mural, right?
That's going to eventually be where the ticket counters are?
There'll be ticket counters all along there.
Okay, which I have to say, my wife always asks me, she says, next time you see Candace McGraw, She's like, I want to know, like, if I'm taking the long-term shuttle, why aren't you dropping me off closer to the gates? Why do we have to walk so far after we get dropped off? And I'm like, look, she's got bigger things to worry about than what Lauren is asking.
Burrell is earning his husband card today.
Yes.
But now it makes sense because eventually that'll be right where you need to be.
Exactly.
Well, okay, so long-term view, I have to tell her.
No, like, you tell Lauren it's a long-term view, but also tell her I do care about what she thinks. A lot of folks have said that, right? So when we did that project and put in that rental car facilities, one of the other things we needed to do was elongate our curb front because, you know, there were too many cars in too tight a space along the upper roadway. So that was
the passenger drop off,
right? It was also to elongate that. We put in a ground transportation center. So now that you get dropped off, you're undercover. You'll come up and then you'll be right at the ticket counters. So we're going through a discussion with the airlines now about which airlines will move there, what space is needed, going through all of that sort of machinations about how that will look. When we move some airlines over there and spread out the ticket counters, that's going to give us the ability to redo all of the ticketing lobby. So, you know, some of the carriers will move over into that space and then stay. Some will move over just while the other parts of ticketing are being renovated. So it was part of a longer term plan.
Will there only be one security line still?
There will still be one security checkpoint building. Everybody will walk down, go through that security checkpoint that's existing, and we'll be adding in a few more lanes there. What you'll also see as you approach ticketing right now, you see where the aircraft is hanging. There's an airplane hanging in. It's sort of a big open area. We're going to be closing in that floor to give you more floor space. So the queues have some more space to go around. And again, just sort of expanding that. Then you'll go through and then you'll we'll be redoing the tunnel and jazzing that up in some way. We don't know what that will look like yet, but redoing that and putting in some new mechanical systems there. And then you'll go into a refurbished concourse A and B. So over the course of the next 5-6 years.
And when you're talking about the tunnel, that's after you're checked in, you go down to where the moving walkways are.
The moving walkways, right.
And the shuttles or the trains, yeah.
The trains out. Mm-hmm. And those are going to be going through a big refurbishment here as well, because everything's about a 1994 ilk, right? So things are reaching the end of their useful life. And our maintenance folks do a great job maintaining everything, but you can only hold it together for so long, right? And we have to refresh. When you go out to the concourses, right now what you don't see, all of those passenger loading bridges are being replaced. And each one of those loading bridges is about $2 million. So when you're looking for another business to get into, like go into the jet bridge business because it's ridiculous.
$2 million
per bridge.
Per jetway, jet bridge.
Yeah. It's
that's,
so
that's stunning to me.
So look,
because it's like a hallway.
It's a movable hallway,
right?
Is what it is.
But honestly, they don't look that.
The whole thing, I have to say, doesn't look that bad. Cause it's pretty neutral.
And they always seem kind of rickety to me, in not in a horrible way, but like not like $2 million. I expect something maybe, you know, that.
It's going to transport you onto the plane like you know.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Well, you know, when you talk about what's, you know, ridiculously expensive for what you get, we're putting in a new baggage system. So when you check your bag, you know, when it goes out and TSA checks, it goes through security, delivered to the plane. All up, that system and some of the things we need to do to get it operational will be $200 million. So these improvements are not inexpensive, and putting together the financing plan and the construction schedule. So what we don't want to do is inconvenience Lauren and the other passengers to have everything.
Especially Lauren, yeah.
Exactly, everything torn up at once, right? So we're going to phase it in, and that's what the team is working through right now.
For now, tell Lauren I'll always drive her to the airport, and I'll drop her off right in front.
Well, she's a master.
She can leave her car at the cool. A lot of people actually do this, because I live on the west side. And we talked about this last week. Burrell just took the Anderson Ferry for the first time
in my life.
People drive to my house, and I'll run them over to the airport because
just take the ferry over, 10 minutes. Yeah.
Well, that's very nice of you, but I'd much prefer them to park at the airport.
Oh, sorry.
It generates revenue. That's very kind of you, Mary.
You got to pay for all of those.
Right.
All
exactly.
Which is real quickly.
Can we go back to one quick thing she said?
Yeah.
I may or may not know someone who just missed their 5 a.m. flight.
Oh, no.
Why are so many of our flights so early?
Okay, so it's actually a great thing that the flights are early in the morning, because that means the aircraft are parked at the airport, and you know you're going to get out first thing in the morning.
No, because delay. They're there.
Exactly, no okay. delays. So the airline schedule for the remainder of the day relies on being able to get out in the morning. And so because we are no longer a hub airport, but we're a connecting airport. They call it origination and destination airport. You want to start your trip early in the morning to get where you need to go. So while 70 to 72% of our passengers go direct to their destination, you know, some folks go to another location and connect in. And so the schedules are timed up to make those connections.
Okay. You do get the whole day at your destination.
Yeah, no, which is great. When you think about, you know, an airline like Frontier, they now have 18 destinations out of CVG, Allegiant 22 direct destinations, and then, you know, all of the other carriers. You want to start early in the morning so you can get to the beach earlier and soak up some sun, or get to your meeting.
So another reflection question, and we want to get into some like fun airport stuff and talk to you about your travel, what you like and what you don't like about traveling. But on a more serious note, your position is very high profile in the public, because it is, you know, the airport is center to economic development. We have this very, you know, regional, you know, we're a region here, but we have many small governments. You know, we don't have a metro government. So on the Ohio side of the river, especially, you've got, you know, the city council, the county commission. You know, you actually are in a county. When you look back, what about the way the region operates has been most challenging for you?
Yeah, interesting question. You know, when you think about where the airport is positioned in Kentucky, but we serve the business community of Cincinnati as well, right? We have to be mindful that we serve everyone in the region. So I always say the airport is zip code agnostic. We want everybody to travel through. So when you look at the passenger demographic, probably about 60 to 65% of our passengers come from Ohio. But you look at the workforce, and consistently about 5% of the passengers and workforce come from Indiana, so don't leave them out. But when you look at the workforce, about 65% of the workforce on campus are from Kentucky. So we serve everybody here, be it from passengers to jobs, everybody in the region. And, you know, it's important that we have a good relationship with businesses and political leaders on both sides of the river. So I say we sort of stand with a foot on each side of the river, and that takes some doing, and it takes some intentionality. You know, I think sometimes it can be a detriment because of the politics. You know, some folks don't think we're Kentucky enough or Ohio enough. And I say, no, let's use that to our advantage. And where it came into play, where it was, a way where it came together beautifully, was the British Airways pitch. We brought folks with us that could talk about how we had economic development entities on both sides of the river. We had tourism, you know, entities on both sides of the river, and that each of those folks were going to work together collaboratively to make sure that this flight was successful. And that's what we've demonstrated. So I think while it could be a detriment, we've turned it around, and I think we use it to our advantage to say, you know, many hands make the work light.
When it comes to lining up funding, though, you're not dealing with just one state. You're dealing with two states, two governors, sometimes two different parties. I would think that there's a potential for, you know, well, you're based in Kentucky, so this is a Kentucky problem, and vice versa. Well, you know, you're the greater Cincinnati, Northern Kentucky airport, and the bulk of your fares are coming from the Ohio side of the river. Has it been tough to negotiate you know, when you want to expand and you want to, you know, do any kind of infrastructure improvement and you need that government support, has it made the job harder because of the two-state dynamic?
Well, first, let's say that the bulk of our funding comes from revenues that we generate ourselves. So we have an operating budget of about $125 million, and we generate that ourselves. When we look at our capital programs and, you know, for instance, very expensive jet bridges I talked about, or the $200 million bag system.
Or developing this land.
Developing the land. We look to additional federal funding. For Hangar Row, we were able to get a $20 million grant from the state of Kentucky. We've worked with Jobs Ohio for some projects, not on the capital development at CVG, but they've been helpful to us. We now manage the Oxford Airport at Miami University, and we've partnered with Jobs Ohio there. So I think one of the things that we've been successful with is this collaboration. And it all to me boils down to we talk a lot about the economic benefit for the region. And I pound that number all the time because, say, the way we do our business impacts how everybody else can do their business. So when we started in 2011, we had both NKU and UC working together on an economic impact study because I wanted it to be academic focused. I didn't want some puff piece from a consultant. I wanted real numbers on what the impact was. And I wanted people on both sides of the river to believe it. So I went to both universities to give it credence. And the number that was came up with through the study based on numbers of 2011 numbers was a $3.4 billion annual economic impact. Big number, great number.
We've done 2011.
That was 2011. We've had the same two universities partner three times over the course of that time, right? You know, every 3 years got into a cadence of doing an economic impact study. The numbers that came back in 2012 were $9.4 billion. So we've been able to grow the economic impact of the region by $6 billion over the course of that 10 years. And that's the story that I'd like to have told about the airport. That's what we do for the region. That's what resonates with politicians. But more importantly, that's what resonates with, you know, the everyday listener. It's the 49,000 jobs that are generated annually at the airport. That's what matters.
All right.
That's my preaching for the day. It's all about, for me, it's all about jobs and what the airport can do for the community.
So you mentioned the Oxford Airport, mm-hmm. which I forgot about. Could you ever see CVG taking over Lunkin? The Futures Commission did think that was a good idea.
I don't know.
Did anyone ask you? Did somebody ask you about that? Or did you read that along with the rest of us?
No, I was part of the Futures Commission, actually.
Oh, that's right. You were on the – yeah, okay.
I think one of the Burl referenced our New Heights strategic plan, and one of the things that is noted in there is how do you have a regional system of airports? You know, talking about all the politicos, talking about what's going on. To me, aviation should be viewed regionally. What can it do for this whole part of the country? And we can talk about a project I'm involved with now that I'm super jazzed about on how we tie Dayton to Louisville together with CVG as the center around aviation. But I don't know what it would look like with the relationship with Lunkin, but I do believe we all have to work together to figure out how we can really focus on aviation as a business for development. As I talked about, it's all about being able to enable people to visit their children, grandchildren, go on a vacation. But for me, more importantly, it's about making sure businesses can be attracted to, remain, and grow in this region. So one of the things, you know, we're working on now, and it's very nascent, and I probably shouldn't talk about it. My folks will give me all sorts of grief. But we started this study with EY, a notion of how do you take that corridor from Dayton, which is very rich in aviation with Wright-Patterson Air Force Base and what the Dayton Development Corp and Jobs Ohio is leaning very much into advanced air mobility. That's, you know, the Jetsons, the flying cars, the, you know, what's going on there. What we're doing at CVG with our dual hubs, cargo hubs and passenger service, and we very much want to get into the sustainable aviation fuel business, which is, you know, something very, very important to our industry. And then you have the other cargo hub in Louisville with UPS. Again, to me, it's all tied, and I don't want to compete with Dayton and Columbus. I don't want to compete with Louisville. I want to compete with the rest of the world. And focusing on this aviation corridor, frankly, using the PNG term, it's like that is our right to win. That we are the only part of this world and the whole world that has these three cargo hubs within an hour and 15 minutes of each other. I'm like, and then again, you have this great research and great work that's being done in advanced air mobility. How do we tie all of this together? So we've had some meetings about how each of the economic development officials from Dayton down to Louisville can work together around aviation, how we can be supportive of each other with each of our little sub sectors or projects within that, and how can we market and grow that together. So again, we've only had a few meetings. I'm hoping to dig more into this, but that really is now my passion project.
Is there competition right now between Louisville and Dayton? And
sure, look, all of us are frenemies. Look, I love all those. I love all those people, right? But we're all, you know, between Louisville and us, we're fighting over the same passengers, okay. Right? Between us and Dayton, we're fighting over same passengers. And I, you know, I've talked to everybody as part of that group and said, let's put any of that aside, but let's look at a bigger view, more global view. How can we really differentiate ourselves? So when we go to an air show like Farnborough, or we're talking to folks in the Middle East, how can we all use the same talking points? How can we talk about our region? How can we each pick up tidbits of what's going on globally and then make them fit? So we've already done a nice environmental scan of what's already here. And then my goal would be to say, all right, how can you take one and make it into like three, right? What might be missing and what can we as a group go out and try to attract and bring here? And so again, I think it's in early stages, but I'd love to be able to see that succeed and that collaboration take hold.
Is it hard to leave? Because it seems like you'd always be in the middle of a project. It's not like, oh, this project ended and now's a good time. It seems like there's like always so much going on. Is it hard to go?
Yeah, it is hard to go, but it's time, right? I think.
No, we don't agree with that. But go ahead.
You know, I love my job, and you can tell I'm still super passionate about a lot of these things. And I can
true.
See,
there's no senioritis here. I'm starting a new project, and I want to dig into it. It's like, no, you're a senior.
No, I think like it's just the potential of what all this can be is limitless. And I hope, you know, we sort of set the path, set the strategy. I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be living here. You know, I hope to stay involved in things in some way. If folks will have me, I'm not sure what that is yet, right? But I just think this is a bold play for the region, and I'd love folks to dig in.
So now the stuff that people really care about.
Yeah.
Everybody cares about what we just talked about.
They're not passionate as passionate as
you are the CEO of an airport. And you travel. What are your pet peeves when you travel, when you go into different airports? What, you know, talk about the Candace McGraw experience as a traveler.
It is funny, right? Because I talk to all of my colleagues and we each, you know, view the experience, you know, and you go in with a critical eye. One, a facility has to be clean. That drives me crazy. It's not too hard to, you know, keep a place clean. You talked about having certain food amenities. You know, that's important. And I think our folks are working on that. I never check a bag. So I can't speak to bag claim experiences. I've heard nightmares at some places and even including ours. So I say carry on if you can, because you don't know what goes on those bag rooms, let me tell you. But my real pet peeve when I go to a place, if the signage is poor.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you know, people rely on that. Right. You need You need that wayfinding. So that's one of my huge pet peeves.
Gotcha. And why don't you like checking a bag?
Oh, I've had some horrible experiences.
Yeah, we all have.
You know, where I've lost my bag. So I'll tell you a quick story, and it scarred me. So this was a number of years ago. I was flying. I was in Cleveland at the time, and I went out to Vancouver for a meeting for an event. And I had to be dressed by, you know, a certain time out the door, and my luggage never arrived. So fortunately, this was back in the day many years ago, and maybe your listeners won't even remember this, when ladies wore slips under their dresses and you had to call down to the front desk to get an ironing board. So they call and say, my bag has arrived. They bring it up. Great. I had to quick iron my dress. I have my slip on. I get the ironing board, ironing my dress, and being a polite guest that I was, I'm like, oh, I'll put my ironing board out because somebody else is going to need this. The door slams behind me. So now I'm standing in the hallway, at least with my slip on, and no way to get back in. So I go down.
Oh my gosh.
So I go by the elevator. No phone to call anybody. I had to go down to the front desk in my slip and asked to be led up to my room, you know, parading through the lobby like that. So, Burl, that scarred me. And after that, I carry
always
on always.
You. Which leads to my biggest pet peeve is that I, too, hate checking a bag. And I have gone through great lengths to, like, make my packing very efficient and make sure my carry-on will fit in the, you know, specifications of the overhead compartment. And, only to be told, well, we're out of space, so we're going to check your bag all the way through. Not gate check, but like, we got to check these bags. And I'm like, that's not fair. Like, that's my pet peeve, because then you end up having to go to baggage claim. It's not as bad when it's a gate check, but when they just know. So
it seems like there's no more gate checks,
which,
like, they only do it through baggage.
Which leads me to my kind of tying this together. I bet there are a lot of things that people just assume are in your control that aren't. And that would be one of them. What other things that do people assume that it's a CVG issue and not like a TSA issue issue? Or,
you know, it is funny when you think about the airport and then the flying experience. There are very few things, frankly, that are solely within the airport authority's control. So that's why we try to make sure we have a very good relationship with TSA or Customs and Border Protection or even each of the airlines, because once you hand your bag over at the ticket counter, we have no control over it. We have no control, direct control over the TSA and how they're processing folks, or even the amount of equipment the TSA will allocate to the airport or the staffing that particular day. So what we have to do.
It's amazing sometimes to me that during peak times, they have the same number of TSA agents as non-peak times. Do you provide feedback to them?
All the time, daily, right?
I bet you're in their grill all the time.
I don't know if that's good or bad there, bro, in a very constructive way. We monitor those things very closely. And I have to say, we have a really good relationship with TSA, and we provide data to them and they provide data to us. We have great tracking tools on knowing what flights are at what time, what they call load factors, how many people we think are going to be on that flight. We're working using a lot of actually great data analytics to feed into them, and then hoping they'll use it relative to their staffing models. And then they have the complexity that the local folks are only allocated, you know, X number of dollars for staffing, and they have to figure out, you know, per month, how many people that equates to. And if you have a very busy morning or you have irregular operations at night, well, now you've used up X amount of your overtime. How are you going to make up for that? Right. So their operation is super complex. So, and even for the airlines, a lot of the airlines contract with third party ground handlers. The way those third-party ground handlers get their business is by bidding low, which a lot of times is less personnel than what you need. And so I have a lot of conversations, and I'm in the airlines grow actually, about we go out there and we try to recruit you and we come here and I push your service hard and I talk about every new airline and all the great routes and you don't deliver a good customer service experience. Like, how can I convert our passengers to use your airline if you're not giving them a good customer experience? So really, there's a lot of dialogue that goes on between us all the time.
I assume there was, but that's good to know.
How much is passenger travel up? And it seems just absolutely crazy.
Yeah, no, this summer has been great. It's been booming. Year to date, we're up 8% over last year, which is super. I think everybody, you know, is still sort of that residual from the pandemic where they couldn't travel and people want to be out and they want to see and they want to go and they missed things. You know, we see some of the airlines are going to be pulling back a bit in the fall, I think, because a lot of them are going through airline maintenance issues, aircraft maintenance issues. So, you know, they have to take some aircraft out of service and either retrofit, train, et cetera. So it will be an issue that's felt nationally because of some of those issues.
That suggests that flights will be more expensive.
I don't know. I hope not. But because they have gone down over the last number of years. I don't know what the trend will be, but it's something we monitor. Again, though,
do want the aircrafts to be fixed.
Well, again, I think it's maintenance purposes, but also for staff training on new type of aircraft. And it's a long time to take to build an aircraft and to get it into production, right? That's yet another issue. And so I think the manufacturers could be cranking out more aircraft. There's definitely a need globally and certainly nationally and locally, you see, because what they call load factor, the amount of people you have on a plane. When was the last time you got on a plane and saw an empty seat? There's very, very few times where you have an open seat next to you. You know, when I started in the business a million years ago, there were a lot of empty seats because airlines wanted to focus on market share as opposed to utilizing their equipment. When you have a $100 million aircraft, you want to fly the hell out of it, and you want to get as much out of it and put as many people or boxes or suitcases on it, and that's what the airlines are focused on now. Maybe not so much focused on the customer experience, which can be problematic.
It has taken a little bit of the romanticism out of air travel when you feel like you're cargo.
You mean all of it?
All of it, yes. I mean, I love watching, you know, commercials from the 60s, early 70s, like when Pan Am was still an airline and it was all about, you know, exquisite dining and little, like you could turn your seat around and there'd be a coffee table and all these things. And I don't think those days will ever come back. But do you think that that it will swing at some point, that the customer feedback and the dissatisfaction will be such that to compete, they'll have to go back to the experience
like
and not
college
just
dorms, right? Sure, dorms, every college dorm now has to be super fancy.
Yeah, that's a good analogy. Shane.
Yeah, no, I think it's a really complex issue because you want. It's an expensive investment to operate an airline, right? And you have that equipment. And so how do you make money is you utilize it as best you can. But also the customer experience where, you know, the seats are narrow, you have very little leg room, they pack you in, right? That's hard. And so on the international front, it's all about customer experience. You know, you have particularly some of the Middle East or Asian airlines that the customer experience is extraordinary. U.S. is different just because of the economics of it. I do think, though, the airlines are focused on customer experience. They do want folks to have a good experience. But as Sherry noted, you worry about the airfare, right? And so how much are you willing to pay for an upgraded customer experience when you only, you know, you're going to be on the plane for 2 hours? But I'm going to go back to something you said, Burl. I don't know. I'm going to challenge your listeners for this because I agree with those, sort of the romanticism of flying and the way it used to be. You know, people would come dressed up and it was a big experience. But every time I got on a plane, I sit and I think, I am getting in this metal tube. It's an amazing adventure. Like, how innovative and how wonderful and how magical it is to, you know, sit down, you know, you're starting at your 5 o'clock flight in the morning, and in 2 hours, or, you know, or in this case, say you go to London, you fly in this metal tube and you wake up and you're on the other side of the world with a brand new experience. It is a phenomenal invention, this air travel, right? And it is just amazing and magical way that people can connect. And so that's what I focus on. And it sort of makes me not focus on the person behind me kicking my seat.
You do. You start, like, there's like whole parts of TikTok now that kind of have that premise, which is go to Chicago for the day. Go to New York for the day. Like, it's totally possible to do if you're willing to not really sleep, but that's, you know, fine. But it's, right. It does talk about that.
When you put it that way, you know, it does sound whiny to complain about, I wish I had a little more leg room. When you're right. You're absolutely right.
Well, it's easy for me to say as a it's easy for me to say as a 5'1" person who doesn't require much leg room. I get it, but
are you
a
window person or an aisle person?
Oh, aisle, 100%.
Oh, I'm a window person.
Oh, aisle. I don't want to be traipsing over people to stretch my legs or go to the.
And lavishly appointed laboratory. Yeah.
Oh, I was going to say, are you a window because you like to look out the whole time, or is it just you
like to look out? But I also like to like lean up against it with my sanitary wipes first, but nonetheless.
Well, and my other thing I think is also I don't like the window just because I have horrible motion sickness. So every time I get on a plane, I have to take Dramamine. Yeah.
That seems like counterproductive to your occupation.
I was in a slight occupational hazard, right. But there's workarounds.
Yeah, you said absolutely
before we are really going long as usual. You did say before we kind of started recording that you're retiring and you want to travel. Where haven't you been? Or is it you just want to go back to places that you've been for work?
Oh, there's a variety of things, right? So my husband retired a couple years ago and we're making our list. There are and we have a list of places we've been, the countries we've visited. And I think... I think I'm up to about 38 or 39.
So that like Facebook thing where you see where if you've been to these 20 countries. Yeah. Like you're, okay.
But there's so many places left. Okay. You know, I think while we're young enough and healthy enough, we want to travel big. So I've been looking at, I'd love to go see the pyramids in Egypt, like a trip to Egypt. I haven't traveled much to Southeast Asia. Everybody raves about Cambodia and Vietnam. I'd like to do that. I mean, I think there's no place that I wouldn't go to. And very few places I wouldn't want to go back to. So I just think the world is a fascinating, wonderful place. And there's so much to see and do. And people are interesting and layered. And the food is great. And I love the experience. And so I want to do it as much of that until I can't. And then we'll kind of stay focused and then do smaller, close-in travel, you know, what when we physically have to do that. But I'm never going to be stagnant. We're not going to stay home. We're going to be on the road doing something.
Well, on that, we should probably let you go.
Yeah.
You probably have a flight to catch
today.
Or something, right?
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had a flight to catch.
No, we could talk to you all day, but thank you for your time. Congratulations on a hell of a run.
Yeah.
It's been a good run,
my
friend.
Making our airport amazing.
Right.
We can see it. Yeah.
Well, and I want to thank you guys. You guys have been great supporters and advocates for the airport. You know, when things weren't going well, you shined a light on it. When things are going well, you shine a light on it. So what you do is super important. I thank you for being good partners.
Well, thank you.
Oh, that was a good conversation. I am still totally in summer mode. I think there has to be another vacation still.
Yeah. I don't want to let go of the summer either.
No, it's...
I want to milk it for what it's worth. You know, fall will be here soon enough. That's why I get irritated when it's like... pumpkin spice latte is earlier and earlier, and it's like, can we just enjoy the summer? But I know, you know, kids are back to school, the buses are running, it just, you know, it's a little cooler in the evenings now, so I get it, but I like to hold on to summer.
It's been a tough week with the convention, like trying to like follow along with everything and back to school in the morning.
Right.
I'm tired.
That is a big shift. So did you have any Cincinnati moments this weekend, Sherry?
You know, I did a lot of the same things that I have been doing. I've been. I went to the preseason Bengals game. There's a pocket park in downtown Cincinnati.
See what I mean? You went to a football game. I went to a baseball game because I'm holding on to the boys of summer.
I'm going to a baseball game next week.
Okay.
I agree. It's still summer. It's still baseball.
That's right. Well, when I went to the baseball game.
We're not in it to win it, it seems, but we can still have fun, right?
Well, Jason Williams, friend of show, former host here. Mm-hmm. And our Reds beat writer, Gordon Whitmire, actually stuck a fork in the season with what they wrote today. So, they're calling it. They're saying...
Even to a casual baseball fan like myself, it doesn't seem...
But you know what? They're not mathematically out yet. The way the playoffs work...
Oh, this is it. Cincinnati fandom right here.
They could go on a run. They could go on a stunning
10-11 win
streak and be right back in it. But they are running out of time.
All right. That doesn't mean we shouldn't go to games, support the team, and have a really good time.
So on a whim, Lauren and I last weekend were talking about what we went to the farmer's market in Montgomery, as we're wont to do Saturday mornings. And it's a good time to go to the farmer's market because lots of stuff is, the harvest is beginning and all of that. So you can get corn now and great tomatoes and all the things. And she said, well, what are you thinking about dinner tonight? Because maybe we were going to buy some stuff at the farmer's market for dinner. And I was like, I was saying we should just go to the baseball game. So my dinner, and this is so Cincinnati. Have you ever had the Big Red Dog at Great American Ballpark?
I have not.
Okay.
I appreciate that Great American Ballpark actually has a lot of fancy food.
They have?
And I tend to skew that way. But
here's the Big Red Dog, okay? It starts with a Big Red Smoky, which is the classic Cons hybrid between a smoked sausage and a hot dog. In fact, there used to be this old advertisement on the old Riverfront Stadium scoreboard, the kind of LED low-res scoreboard where an umpire and a baseball player are arguing over whether it's a hot dog or a smoked sausage, and they're both right. But anyway, that's the Cons.
And they're both right. Okay.
That's the Cons Big Red Smoky. So you start with that.
Okay.
You wrap it in bacon. You then take a pretzel bun.
Oh, my God.
And spread pimento cheese on it. You put
right out of your system. It's so salty.
You put the Big Red bacon wrap, Big Red Smoky on the bed of pimento cheese in the pretzel bun. We're not done yet. It has It has a special sauce. Well, when we were talking about what's new at the ballpark in the spring in terms of food, that was one of them. So anyway, it has its special sauce that goes on top of it. And then the guy said, do you want sauerkraut on top of this too? And I was like, why, yes. Yes, I do. And you're right. It is a heart attack in a bun, but it is so good and so Cincinnati because...
All right. I'm going this coming week and I am going to get one and I will give you my review.
You have to work for it a little bit because...
I was like one place to get
it. Well, they have a lot of hot dog stands. They're not at every hot dog stand. So you kind of, and if you walk up to one and they don't have it on the menu board there, you can say, hey, where can I get a Big Red Dog? And they'll say, oh, you need to go here or here. As I ate it, I thought, well, here's my Cincinnati moment right now because
that is very Cincinnati.
And
pimento cheese is very Cincinnati. I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
Not in a bad way, you guys. No criticism there. I like pimento cheese.
I unfortunately went to the game against the Royals where it was like 10-1 in the fourth inning. And we got to see Luke Maley pitch. He's a catcher, So anytime they pull a position player out to pitch, it's a lost cause that particular game. But it was kind of fun. Is there a better place to be than the ballpark on a summer night?
No, and we've had some glorious weather, too.
So. We had some great weather. So anyway, well, should we wrap this up?
Let's do it.
All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. But my heart keeps calling me backwards as I get on the 707.
song lyrics that park an airport. I like it. If you enjoyed the podcast, please give us a rating and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism, and I know you do, and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button and see what special offer we might have. Riding high, I got tears in my eyes. You know, you got to go through hell before you get to heaven.
Thanks again, you guys. See you next week.